Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free, year-round fundraising program for schools. You can learn more at schoolspiritvending.com.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
In today's show, Kyle Wagner, the founder and lead consultant of Transform Educational Consulting, joins me. And we go through a number of things like which superhero would play Kyle in real life, the explore possibilities style of leadership, the paradox and freedom from removing yourself from everyone you know, and why smaller systems equal greater innovation. Sit back, relax. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. Well, hey there, Better Leaders. I have a treat for you today. Kyle Wagner is a new connection that I've made, and I really love the stuff that he's putting out there. He's the founder and lead consultant for Transform Educational Consulting, an organization that empowers school leaders to lead change and improve student learning through simple, innovative strategies and learning structures. He's also the former coordinator of Futures Academy at the International School of Beijing, a program that uses interdisciplinary project-based learning to connect students to their passions and the world outside of school. His book, The Power of Simple, documents this experience and helps provide simple research-based strategies for school transformation. Kyle is also a former educator at High Tech High, the school featured on the hit documentary Most Likely to Succeed. He holds a master's in teacher leadership with a thesis that focuses on developing democratic classrooms and distributed leadership models. When not writing or teaching, he is performing with his original band, participating in karaoke contests, and traveling the world with his partner. He currently resides in San Diego, California, where he spends time developing schools of the future while helping other school leaders build theirs. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you.
So, you know, this has nothing to do with school, and we're Facebook friends now, and I think your brother sings too, and I remember like a Christmas hit that he put out, and that was cool. I connected with it, got pumped up.
Yeah.
And just going through your bio, I mean, you're a musician too. Who's more talented?
Who's more talented?
Yeah.
Oh, me or my brother. Oh, that's tough. I gotta say my brother. I guess we both have talent for music. My parents my dad owns a music school, made us play piano through 18, and we're very creative at 16 years old, said we could play another instrument. We thought our parents were the coolest people in the world, and they're giving us so much freedom. So he's super talented. I just kind of try to emulate him a little bit. So I gotta give him that one.
All right. I was trying to throw you a softball there so you could share the show with him and really let him have it, but I guess you prefer the candor, so that's okay.
Yeah, no, well, if anyone's listening to this show and wants to check out some good music, is it's you look up Brett Wagner or you look up Emerson. That was the name of his band, and he's got a lot of good stuff. Emerson with an E-M-E-R-S-E-N. So check him out.
Okay, we'll link that up for the people, and they can check that out in the show notes for sure. Kyle, what got you into education? What inspired you to pursue that career?
So I've always had this kind of like hero disposition. And I guess if there was like a Spider-Man or a Superman or like a Batman of education, that was like what I wanted to do, if that makes any sense. So at 11 or 12 years old, I was a peer mediator, and I was very interested in helping people out. And I think of a profession that has the most profound ability to help people get from where they are to where they want to be. And I think an educator can do that. So I think of myself as putting on a cape every day with an E on the back of it for education.
That's cool. So you mentioned Superman, Spider-Man, Batman. I guess if you had your choice of any superhero, who would you be and why?
Oh, man. That's a great question. I asked my students this, like, who would win in a fight? So we won't talk about the fight.
Nice.
But I guess mine might be, in terms of a superhero, they're not so much a superhero, but I would say the Joker, Batman and Robin. But not necessarily the Joker that's in the current series, but when Jim Carrey played it, he was a longtime hero of mine. So I guess he's probably the closest one to a superhero that I'd want to emulate, and just because he's comedic.
You say ask your students, like, if two superheroes fought, like, who would win?
Yes. I don't know. I loved asking that particular question because it was kind of, before we'd launch into debate and we talk about, you know, argumentative measures, I would literally play the devil's advocate and ask who would win in a fight. And I'd get really, you know, I'd get really serious about it. And I put on a straight face and I say, guys, this is a really, really serious question. I think we need to take this seriously. And so I think they'd enjoyed that, you know, the middle school.
Yeah, yeah. Did Aquaman ever win?
Did Aquaman? I don't know. I actually haven't even seen Aquaman, so I'm a I'm a really bad superhero follower. What do you think? Do you think Aquaman would win?
You know, his superpower is that he could talk to dolphins, so kind of cool, but not so useful maybe in fights. So I don't know.
Yeah, unless he's underwater and he's trying to get him gang up on a shark or something.
Right. They can be ferocious then. So Kyle, how would you describe your leadership style and how did you develop this style?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, hopefully in the conversation so far, which has been kind of new, I think you probably can tell that my leadership style, I have a very hard time just telling people what to do. I like really exploring possibilities, and I really like it when people that are, and I don't want to say necessarily under me, but are next to me, because I believe in a really distributed leadership style, have an opportunity to really discover and explore how they lead. And so I have more of a coach-like type of personality of leadership. I believe that leadership needs to be personalized and that every human being is led in a different way. And every human being, just like our students, has a different kind of button that really activates really what they can do best. And so mine's kind of more that exploratory coach-like facilitator type of leadership, just asking the right questions to really develop and tap that potential in that person.
Are there some favorite types of questions that have served you well in terms of exploring possibilities, or is there anything you can give us, like nuts and bolts, like practical things that would help people develop that skill set?
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of this stuff I borrowed too. Like I was hearing another guest was talking about with adaptive schools. I think that cognitive coaching piece is really quite vital. And I think the questions usually stem from the outcomes that that particular person wants to see, you know? So whether it be like, what would success look for you, like for you? Or like, if you had really a crystal ball and you could look at your particular classroom, what would, and you had no limitations, what would that look like? What would students be doing? What would you be doing? You know, what does that look like? Because a lot of times in leadership, you know, we focus on really what is the gap and where are they kind of failing and where are teachers having problems or challenges. And if you start with that approach, that kind of question, it immediately either A, gets them on the defensive, or is making them look at something that might not be a skill set or strength of theirs. And I'd much rather have them look at really what is a vision of who they want to become, what do they want their classroom to look like, and then really start putting those things in place that are going to help them reach that.
Yeah, that's good. You know, what I'm hearing you say is really understanding where the people are you're serving, where they're at, and then asking those questions that connect to their most desired outcomes.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think it all has to do with tapping into their particular desired outcomes and not necessarily coming with a set agenda. Because, and I think you'll probably ask me a little bit about this later, but once you come in with a set agenda and people perceive that it's your agenda as a leader, and they might perceive that you're coercing them somehow and getting them to align with your agenda, then it's an uphill battle.
Yeah, you could stay there and unpack that a little bit. You know, why is that such a problem, and what's the antidote?
So I think the problem is, and this is what I found in a big mistake that I've made in leadership. I think the problem is twofold. I think that we have to understand how people like to be led, A, and I think we have to understand where people's priorities are. And sometimes as leaders, we sometimes forget what it's like to be in the people who are leading their position. And whether it's an absence for not participating daily, like if we're not teaching ourselves, and if they like to be led in a different way that we like to be led. I think if we come in with our initiatives as leaders and it's our particular agenda, and my particular agenda a lot of times has been, let's always push the envelope, let's change, let's innovate. And that's because, you know, I'm quite an adaptive, very flexible person. But I've realized that there's a lot of people that need to take slower steps, and for good reason. And they want to kind of test the waters first. And so I think that's, you know, that's important to not necessarily come with your own agenda and really understand where people are at. And how people like to be led is just so crucial, because I am the very energetic, as you probably tell already, the enthusiastic, like, let's get it. Let's go, like, let's jump headfirst in the water. We don't know exactly where we're going. Let's build the plane as we're flying it. And, you know, let's put our pom-poms on. And you know what? A lot of people don't necessarily like to be led that way, and that's really not their style. And so, you know, it's taking a step back, and it's coming from a more empathetic standpoint and starting the conversation with them. Where do you want to be? What would a great classroom look like? I mean, if it's a curriculum coordinator, like what would an ideal curriculum for you look like? Or if it's a Cal that's leading a team, or a department head, or whoever it is, and then going from there and really, really working from that. So I think the anecdote, like you're asking me, what's the anecdote for that? I think is just is starting with a lot of questions and listening and building that relationship before you, you know, lead with your own initiatives.
That's good. That's good. And I think being able to connect, build those relationships, you talk a lot about empathy. It's so important in terms of being able to lead people and have any type of influence. I'm curious how you might respond to this. And one thing that I've learned through my own leadership journey, in some ways we are similar. I like the idea of jumping, and you said, you know, jumping head first in and, you know, just kind of figuring out how to swim and where you go from there. But sometimes, like you mentioned, that people don't like to be led that way potentially. Mm-hmm. Some people also might confuse that as not having a plan, which is, in my opinion, not necessarily true. But, you know, what do you do with that?
Yeah, that's interesting. So, I would be a very strong advocate for when you understand how people like to be led, is that you're not necessarily leading one initiative in one set way. So by that, I mean, if you're going to lead a big project-based learning initiative, let's say, because we know, I mean, the data show that project-based learning has a tremendous impact on student learning. And whereas all your staff might know that, there's different ways in which they want to go about it. And so I think that it has to be very personalized. And so you have to meet people where they're at. So let's take the gung-ho. Let's take the, you know, the go-getters. Let's have a team. Let's have that particular team internally within our school. And let's have them lead the biggest charge. But let's also remember that there are those other teachers that maybe need a little bit of handholding. So let's lead it in a different way with them. We might let a lot of experimentation happen with that one group, and we might provide a lot of training, a lot of structures and coaching for that other group. And you know, that group that's like, you know what? I'm going to watch those other guys. And in the back of their mind, they might think, I'm going to watch them fail, but I'm going to watch them first before I jump in. And so then maybe that's that particular group you're working with is let's look at a lot of data that's out there. Let's look at a lot of schools that have this particular model, and let's discover what those biggest learnings are from them, and having those groups share with each other and to really cross-pollinate. And so I think you're honoring everybody in that. Now, of course, you're all going towards the same particular initiative, but you're all going at it in a little bit of a different way. And it feels like you're honoring the people. You're honoring your teachers in that work.
Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free year-round fundraising program for schools. And believe it or not, their CEO and founder, Matt Miller, was a guest on episode 5 of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. He can increase your school spirit with custom stickers for your school and raise funds at the same time. There's no upfront costs, no volunteers, no selling. It's absolutely free to you, the school. If you're sick of the same old ways of raising money, check out School Spirit Vending at schoolspiritvending.com. So we've talked a lot about, I think, things that you do really well in terms of leading change. But what would you consider your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've kind of touched on a little bit. I think my biggest leadership mistake has been, as you mentioned earlier, some people might perceive, and there's this, I'll preface it with this, it's an adaptive school trainings you go to, and they have people stand in the corners of the room based on how they will trust someone. What allows you to build trust in someone? And there's one that is an openness. For openness, if someone is very open, then you are that person who said, okay, I will trust that person because they're open. One is honesty. Okay, they're going to be honest when they don't know. One is competence. Hey, are they very competent? Have they shown a lot of data that is supportive of what they're trying to do? Are they on time to every single meeting? Do they have a very well-articulated plan and they're organized? And you know what? I can't remember the fourth one, but I'm going to touch on the third one. The third one is competence. And when you stand in the corners, you look at what corners other people stand in and how they like to be led. And I was standing in the very open, honest one. I mean, I value open honesty, and that's how I really develop trust with someone. And I remember my middle school principal at that particular time, and I was as a coordinator of a small program, he was standing in the competence side, and that's how he builds trust. And that was a big aha moment, because a lot of the ways in which I was leading my team had to do with that openness and honesty, that a lack of competence in the change that I was that I was trying to work with them to promote. And so that was a big eye opener. So I think one of my big leadership mistakes is leading people the way I like to be led. And I think also too, I have this soapbox and I love to get on my soapbox and I need to get off of it a lot of times. And I think my book is a little bit of soapbox, but I try to be as, you know, honest and open as possible. Obviously I value those and be reflective, but there's times where I get on my soapbox where I just need to take a step back and just listen. And I think I've made leadership mistakes where I've got in the soapbox and tried to lead a charge and realized that, you know what, that's just a talking head up there. I don't want to listen to that. So those are some mistakes I made.
Gotcha. Thank you for sharing that. And speaking of your book, The Power of Simple, I want to read a couple of sentences from the intro, really, and, you know, just give you opportunity to take it from there, because I think it's a real great hook. It grabbed my interest. But you start off, I quit my job, sold my car, terminated my housing lease, and finished packing my bicycle into a small carrying crate. It was the last item of value I had left to my name. Its destination, Shenzhen, China, which I'm sure I butchered that name. Whether or not it would make it there was completely left to chance. What was I doing? And that's what I want to ask you, Kyle. What were you doing?
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, that's a good, and I think the introduction goes on to say on some of the other things I was leaving behind too was not just my possessions. I was leaving behind a very good position at High Tech High, one of the most innovative schools that gets worldwide renowned attention across the world. So that question, what was I doing? It was a great question. Why was I going to China? But look, you know, the reason I did that is because I knew I needed to change. And I think you and I, you know, both know, I think anyone who's listening to this particular podcast right now knows when there's that time that you need to make that change and you don't know exactly where it's going to lead you, but you just trust it. You know, you just trust the universe. And I'd gone to China summer before, fell in love with it, didn't exactly know what it was going to bring in terms of educational opportunities, but knew that that was the place I needed to be. And so I just trusted that intuition. I had a friend who helped me out, who helped me pack up all my stuff. And, you know, I did have a contract, but that's about all I had. I had a contract, I had no contacts out there, and said, you know, I'm going to pursue this level of stuff I've been doing over here. And that's going to happen over there in China. So what was I doing was, and I think later on I say, it was actually the most peaceful decision I've ever made, which sounds paradoxical, but by me giving up all of those things, I felt so comfortable, because when I really stripped it down, I was like, really, you know, who am I? What am I about? And this allowed me to really get honest with myself.
When you find yourself there, what do you think, if you could distill it down to one gigantic takeaway that you could put a bow on for us, what was that biggest takeaway for you?
I honestly think that the biggest takeaway for me is that sometimes to do what you truly, truly, truly want to do and know what's best, whether that's for student learning or even yourself, or, you know, aligning yourself to your life's purpose, I think for me, the biggest takeaway is removing yourself as far as possible from anybody that you know. That's the biggest takeaway. Like, because I didn't know anyone. I didn't know the language, you know, like that. My biggest takeaway was like, that's when I started, like you talk about music. That's when I joined a couple of bands. That's when I started doing some like stand-up comedy, you know, that's when I wrote my book. Like all of these things happened because I didn't have anything. And my biggest takeaway is sometimes you have to like go back to like when you didn't have any of these things and then ask yourself, who am I? What am I about?
It's an interesting paradox that you say, you know, removing yourself from everybody you know to sort of get this freedom and almost get some clarity and who you are at the core at the same time.
Yeah.
So in the book too, you know, you talk about doing a few things and doing them well, and you talk about mission and you juxtapose like a very convoluted mission with a very crystal clear mission of Google. And that also connects then to, you know, flexible scheduling and the power of doing that on a, like a small model scale, mm-hmm. and doing some really interesting things to, you know, for kids. So can you talk a little bit about how you get to that concise and clear mission and then how it gets lived out? And in this case, you know, with some flexible scheduling.
Sure. So I think to get down to that mission, look, schools, and I've even mentioned this, have an incredibly tough job. Schools, especially large schools, they're accommodating for so many different learners with so many different needs, with so many different demands, whether it's, you know, state or standardized testing, but then at the same time, they're asked to innovate, but not to innovate too much because, you know, this kid's got to still pass the standardized test scores. And then you move, you know, you move your dial over a little bit that direction, and then people complain they're not being innovative enough. So I want to first say that it's an incredibly, incredibly tough job. But I think it becomes easier when you shrink the size of your systems. And so when it comes to mission and vision, and you're trying to write a mission and vision for an entire student body of 2,000, 3,000 students, that's a hard thing to do because you want to recognize that there are several voices and there are several different ways in which you want to go. So I think you need to create smaller, and I don't want to call it schools within a schools because, you know, I realize that there's problems with that as well. But you need smaller systems. You need to break that larger system up. And the reason you need to do that is because creating a more clear mission and vision around a couple of things that you're going to do real well will then make sense. And it will really be directed towards the needs of those particular students. And if that's not necessarily the mission or vision that's going to best serve those students, well, then there's another smaller system within that school that's going to kind of pick up that slack. So like, let's look at organizations. Now, obviously Google is a ginormous organization and schools don't have the luxury of doing exactly what Google does in terms of, you know, business. But Google's mission statement is organize the world's information and make it universally accessible to all. I mean, that is such a profound statement, but yet it's so simply written that every one of their decisions that they're making can ask themselves, hey, is this organizing information for people and is it making it universally accessible? And I like to use the specific concrete example of Google glasses, right? Like, where are Google glasses now? I don't know.
Recycling bin? I'm not sure.
In a recycling bin, right? Now, I challenged my friend who works for Google too, you know, because he just got this job at Google and, you know, he's talking about the greatness of Google, and it's great. But I said, okay, what about Google Glasses? And I was just trying to make the point of, like, did that align to their mission? Did, like, creating Google Glasses align to the particular mission? Now, look, they got self-driving cars and other things. But I found that when schools or companies can align to their mission or vision, and they have a simple mission or vision statement, they can do those things that they've said they're going to do and do them very well. And those are the things they do well. So inevitably, they're going to succeed at those things. So I think schools need to do the same thing. I think we need to have smaller systems. And if you have a small school, you can really focus it on a couple key priorities. And the way you go about that is getting teams of people together, getting community involvement, figuring out first, what do we really value? What does an ideal graduate of our program look like? I don't know how many schools do this. How many schools backwards plan before they write their mission and vision and say, once a kid graduates from our school, this is what they look like, and create that vision of what that kid looks like. What are their potential skills? And then go back from there and make it more concrete and say, okay, what's going to be that culminating experience that kid's going to have? And now what values are we pulling from that? And those things are going to make up your mission and vision.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And I think it, you know, the backwards mapping and starting with the end in mind, that kid that gets produced from the community is so powerful. It gets people fired up and then also acts as a motivator, right? When energy gets low or it's the middle of the year, you know, and you kind of want to start coasting to the break or whatever, you bring them back to that beautiful vision of what you want to produce, and it helps people get back on the right page.
Yeah. So, I mean, with that too, you're probably going to ask me another question, but I think we're probably going to be in agreement. I mean, how great would that be if rather than posting your mission and vision, because we had a leader who did this, and I have incredible respect for him because he allowed me to do a lot of things that we needed to do at the school. But he would always start with the mission or vision, all the meetings. But if you look at your mission vision statement enough, the mission or vision, no matter how inspiring it is, like if Google said, we organize world's information, make it universally accessible to all. If they started every meeting like that, you're going to lose some people after a while. But if you started it with what that actually looks like when it's played out, that is inspiring. So if someone's saying leaders for tomorrow, or to take global problems and solve them locally, and you actually showed that played out in every meeting, and you actually show a kid or a video of someone in someone's classroom doing that, that is going to fire people up. And that in the mid-year when you're losing your momentum, that's going to fire people up again.
Yeah, I love that. Love that idea, especially, you know, using kids are your best advocates. And that's why we're all in this industry. And so to see them show the mission instead of posting the mission definitely makes it real. Carl, I'm curious, you know, I'd love to hear the story of starting Transform Educational Consulting.
Okay. So the story of starting it was, it was the exact same story of me leaving everything behind in the United States. And it was now, ironically, leaving everything behind in China, which sounds weird because, you know, I'm coming back to San Diego, which is my hometown, but it was knowing that I needed to make a shift and a change. And I felt literally the inclination after doing enough conferences, after doing enough speaking engagements around the program I worked with the leadership team to develop over at the International School of Beijing called Futures Academy. It was knowing that, you know what, this seed is going to blossom with or without me. It's been going on for 3 years now. I feel comfortable to be able to leave this and really wanting to plant those seeds elsewhere and knowing that there's so many leaders that are incredible leaders that might need support. Support in particular areas and schools needing support in these big changes. I mean, look, we're entering a very interesting time for education. The more and more things become automated, the more and more certain jobs become obsolete, the more and more kids are being set up now for 50% of them actually right now, 14, 15 year olds, 50% of jobs that exist when they graduate are not jobs that exist now. So this is a huge gap. Like this is a huge gap from where we know we need to get as schools and where we are now. And having the opportunity to, from the ground up, be given the freedom, the great freedom and responsibility to build a program that asks, what does the future look like? And let's build it now. And seeing that it works. And, you know, obviously we've learned a lot, made a lot of mistakes along the way. But I just want to help schools to live out their particular vision, whatever that might be. And so that's why I started Transform Education Consulting, is really to work with school leadership teams in the community to really help develop their vision and help the vision not to be something that, you know, hey, we're strategic planning now 4 or 5 years, we'll get in our vision. But let's start like living out our vision right away. Let's get data from it and let's innovate on a daily basis and let's reflect upon that process. And, you know, if I can help schools be more reflective and help schools to facilitate that process, because it's nice to have someone from the outside coming in, that to me is my ideal situation. So that's why I started the consulting firm.
Great. And where can people get a hold of you if they're interested in forming that relationship and starting to work with you?
You can get a hold of me through emailing me at one. So it's kylewagner@transformschool.com. So you can email me that way. That would probably be the best way to get a hold of me. I don't know if it'll be left in the cliff notes if you want to reach out via phone, but also I'm the website. If you want to find out more too, and just find out if, hey, there's some ideas for you, it's transformschool.com. And so that's another way. If you just are interested, you know, in leading change, because I think everyone who's listening to this particular podcast, Daniel, the way you've set it up is incredible. You know, you bring people in here all the time. You're doing new things. So if you're just interested in that and not necessarily knowing what direction you want to take, encourage just to check out the book, The Power of Simple. I think there's something in there for everyone. And you can find that book on Amazon.
Yeah. And definitely, listeners, by now you should be very familiar with show notes, how those work, but just click the podcast, you know, album art, or if you're on the website, just scroll down and all the links to all the resources will be there for you. So you could pick up for sure The Power of Simple. It's just a click away. I encourage you to get it today. So, you know, Kyle, you're passionate about project-based learning, and that means a lot to a lot of different people. Can you define that a little bit and how you maybe help schools implement project-based learning?
Project-based learning, it's a tough one, right? Because there's so much that's out there around project-based learning, and we've all done projects as kids. And some of you, I don't know, Daniel, if you've done this, but have you ever had to recreate a castle or build something out of sugar cubes, or that you did the science fair? Have you done these kind of things?
Of course. Yeah. But I'm terrible at that. I was always really bad at science fairs.
You're bad at science fairs. Oh, why is that?
I don't know. I just did not win medals. I've never been a science guy. I've tried. I want to be, but I've failed terribly every time.
Okay. Well, I mean, the science fair, so basically project-based learning, the way it differs from that, and it, first of all, in terms of that failure, that's totally natural, right? Not science is in everyone's bag. But really project-based learning is a way in which that you can reach most of your students. And it's taking an authentic problem. It's taking an authentic challenge, or not even necessary problem, just an authentic question that is of interest. And through that particular question or problem or challenge is having students come up with either solutions or answering that particular question in some kind of exhibition, product, or performance. And so that's, I mean, a kind of a more simplistic way to define project-based learning. It's having the project, which is driving a lot of learning. Now, what's different, Daniel, from you, from like that science fair is, you know, you picked a particular question, which is great, right? You probably, what do you remember what your science fair was on?
No, I remember, you know, poster boards. I know I built some type of volcano type thing once out of sand. You know, even in Boy Scouts with the Derby cars, you know, those always, I think I won last a couple years in a row. So like anything that you have to do and build with your hands, you know, science wise, I failed. I communicate, I do the podcast. I love to write, you know, English. That was my major in science stuff. Just it never happened for me.
Never happened. Well, you know what? It's you and me both. We're both in that same boat. So it's not the end of the world. But the hands-on part is extremely important. And I think people misconstrue project-based learning because, hey, you know, it's hands-on. And there's some really great science probably that you learned out of that particular project. But the difference between those kind of project experiences is you are building something, whether it's a volcano, whether it's a solar system, whether it's a display of some sort. You are building something with your hands to recreate in some way knowledge. And that's more project-oriented learning. The learning is pretty much driving the project, not the project driving the learning, as opposed to project-based learning where it's really the project is driving the learning. So I'll give you a case in point. Now, you can create a backboard on a bunch of business principles of entrepreneurship and tell everybody about entrepreneurship and what are good entrepreneurs and what are some of their most admired companies and what it takes to be a good entrepreneur and then stand with suit and ties in front of a backboard. Or you can tell students their question, how to use the principles of entrepreneurship to create your own business to meet a community need. Now, within that question, students are engaged in trying to create a small business to meet that particular need. And that they're learning all of the skills and the content of entrepreneurship through that particular task in creating their own business. And so that would be project-based learning. The project is going to drive the learning, not the learning driving the project.
Yeah, love it. And having that problem, having that question you're trying to answer to drive everything, hopefully just like going back to the mission and vision, the kids, you know, living that out and being the motivator there, it's sort of the fire that ignites that interest. So you arrive at the answer, even if you fail, but you know, you're trying to find that solution and constantly hunting for it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you know what? That failure is going to come numerous times. And I think I'm going to get my soapbox. I apologize. Just really quickly. It's all good. But sometimes in schools, we create those hypothetical situations and kids are very good readers. And I think that kids can read right through if this is a school thing and this is something, you know, for the teacher because the teacher has to cover or if it's something for them. And I think really those authentic experiences, those project-based experiences are experiences that you're engaging students in where they're actually going to serve some kind of value, whether that's creating a business to meet a community need, whether that's creating some kind of like prosthetic for a low-cost solution for somebody who needs that. That is an authentic pursuit. And that process, Daniel, that you mentioned of failure is going to happen, of course, but it's that process of failure that's going to lead them to those breakthroughs and to bettering whatever their particular solution was with every successive iteration.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. You know, it's growth mindset and just like how you frame the failure and how you respond to it as a leader of a class, a leader of a school, so that people internalize it in a productive and positive and meaningful way. We're kind of getting towards the end of the show, but there's a few questions I want to try to rapid fire through. And I really am interested in how you'd respond. Concerning school leadership, what have you changed your mind about in the past few years?
In regards to school leadership? Yeah, I guess what I've changed my mind in is, you know, my experience with leadership is I was brought on board with an existing leadership team to push really a new initiative. And, you know, to be really quite frank and honest, it was a very, very challenging situation to be in because the perception piece is so big. And when you're trying to do something like that, if you don't really have everyone on board or even a majority of people on board or they don't understand the why, it's going to be an uphill battle. And we were in a tough spot because we were a school within a school. And as such, as a school within a school, you kind of, you know, you kind of have a scarlet letter on your back. And hey, why are we not being recognized? Why is this particular program being recognized? And I've learned a lot through leadership, and I've rethought that leadership is not necessarily doing things and, you know, pushing particular initiatives. I've realized that leadership is taking people from where they're at and taking them one step farther from where that is. And if you try to ask people to cross this giant chasm on their very first step, they're either A, going to try to cross that and fall down in the ravine and be resentful and blame you as a leader for taking them there, or not make that step at all. And it's better to build that bridge and take people one step from where they're at, wherever that is. And that is being a better leader.
What's one book every principal should read right now and why?
I think Made to Stick. It's one of my favorite. Have you read this one?
I haven't, no.
Yeah. So Made to Stick, and it's by the Heath brothers. And they talk about sticky ideas and what are the ideas that are going to stick. So if you're, you know, to throw a bunch of darts at the board, which ones are going to stick? Ideas such as sticky notes, in fact, were one of those. And, you know, when JFK said, we're going to land a man on the moon. That was a particular sticky idea as well. And so these kind of ideas, and a book called Accelerate. It's X, L, and then R, and then the number 8, Accelerate. And that's, I believe, by John Cotter. And it's more written as a business book, but it's more written in terms of how do you lead organizational change and how the systems of the future are going to be a lot more networked. They're going to be a lot, the leadership lines are going to be a lot more blurred. It's not going to be from a top-down linear way in which leadership worked previously. So that's another book I'd recommend. Innovator's Mindset by George Kuros is obviously a great one as well, in how to develop that innovator's mindset, and anything by Tony Wagner about changing schools in the future and 21st century learning.
What do you do for fun, Kyle?
What do I do for fun? Well, I think you introduced it at the beginning with karaoke. I like to sing. There's lots of karaoke places that I go to down the street. I like to write music myself and play music and playing with my bands. I like to play tennis and soccer. I'm in a soccer league as well. And those are some of my key hobbies.
You know, soccer is cool. The original football, some might say. And, you know, my girl, she's from Zimbabwe. So during the Super Bowl, she wore Arsenal. Or no, actually, it was a Real Madrid jersey. She said, I'm representing real football tonight. So, you know, so that's cool. Soccer's a great
sport. So where are you in terms of football? Are you more the football, the world international football fan, or American football?
I like both. I mean, I'm always going to love American football. Growing up, you know, in Chicago and the Bears. And, you know, I was a kid when they won the Super Bowl. So that was a really fun time. And they had the Super Bowl shuffle, you know, and that taught me how to dance very effectively. So, yeah, I love American football for sure. But I think, you know, internationally, like, soccer is such a dramatic sport, and I love to see the diversity that's there, you know, represented by all the teams, and when they come together through Olympics or World Cup type battles, it's one of those things that you could really, you know, share if you do a lot of traveling. You're gonna probably bump into somebody that's passionate about soccer a lot more than you're gonna bump into somebody who cares about American football.
I got a question then. Arsenal's playing and the Bears. Okay, the Bears have made the Super Bowl. Let's just say hypothetically.
This is awesome. Okay.
The Bears have made the Super Bowl and Arsenal is in the Champions League. So they're in the finals as well. And uh-huh. It's on at the same time. And you have one TV between you and your girlfriend from Zimbabwe. Who gets the channel changer? And how do you compromise? How do you negotiate that?
I'm going to defer to her. We're going to watch Arsenal and DVR the Bears game.
All right, that is a good answer. That means you're going to keep
absolutely. And here's the thing, too. I mean, if historically the Bears are going to let you down, so I'm not going to.
Oh no!
No, it's true. Look at the facts. So I mean, it's just going to break my heart, and I'm going to get mad. So we'll do Arsenal.
Hope Arsenal doesn't let you down.
No, they won't. They won't. Hey, Kyle, if you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
Oof. I'm going to take one that's similar to what you mentioned. Mine's going to be engineering. because I had someone who said that I had zero common sense when I was 13 years old. So I think that would be something I'd really love to be better at.
You know, I love how educators can just, you know, build you up so much like that. When I was in school, my PE teacher told me, quote unquote, I was a motor moron because I was trying to do cartwheels. And I guess they weren't that great. And I'm a motor moron. So needless to say, yeah, I'm not a gymnast.
So that stuck. That's interesting. That stuck with you for so long. You know what you should do? You should do that cartwheel. Do you remember who that teacher was?
No, I don't remember his name. I do remember he had some type of physical issue going on because he walked in a really unique way, you know?
Okay.
So I don't know if it was something with his spine or something was going on, but that's what I remember. Uh-huh. And that he just very harshly told me I was a motor moron.
Oh man. Well, there's probably more going on with that statement. So maybe he was just trying to relate a little bit with his challenges that he was going through.
Potentially. Yeah. So I got it tattooed across my chest. Never forget. Kyle,
yeah.
Listen, I'm really proud of you. You made it through the show. I've got one last question for you. It's a doozy.
Right.
You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build this dream school? And what would be your top three priorities?
I'm going to give kind of an answer that you might hate, but like you have to read the book. That's literally the school that we had the opportunity to build. So it's in the book. Do you want to give me a little teaser though?
Sure. Give a little teaser. And again, listeners, that's all linked up in the show notes. So you can click on The Power Simple by Kyle and it'll bring you right to Amazon. You can pick up that book.
All right. So my little teaser for that would be and I heard another listener mention this too. It needs to be very, very open, dynamic, fluid space. So rather than there being standards and curriculum for learning, it's centered just around good questions. So I heard another listener was mentioning the question might be, what do you love to do and how can you change the world doing that? That might be a particular question. And I think that'd be entirely exciting to see a team of facilitators, as I would call them, not teachers, helping students to discover what that is and what indelible mark that they're going to leave on the world and how they could pursue that particular passion, and having a very open space, open schedules. And there's about three more. I'm not going to give you the other three. You have to get the book for the other three more. So flexible scheduling, flexible space, that's going to allow these things to happen. And then you can find out the remaining three.
Yeah, it's definitely worth the read and encourage everybody to pick that up. Again, it's in the show notes. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice? And again, the best way to get a hold of you.
Yeah. So my parting words of advice would be to like keep the good fight. I don't necessarily want to call it a fight, but obviously the times that we're living in now, especially with, won't get too political, but there's going to be some changes, obviously, with education and whatever that means for wherever you're at in the system. I just want my parting words is to say, you know, keep that motivation for why you became an educator, because it literally is the most gratifying job in the world. And thank you so much for what you do, whatever it is in regards to education. And again, if you want to continue the conversation, you want to chat, tell me a little bit about what's going on in your school and see if we might be able to collaborate a little bit together, or just to tell me any interesting things you're doing, then you can get a hold of me at kylewagner@transformschool.com.
Better leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Kyle. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Kyle in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Kyle, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you so much, Daniel.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better, or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network. Podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.